please dial star 611 for assistance.
We get signal, my screen turn on. You're listening to the radio program about Hackers Places. This here little radio program about Hackers Places. And there we are with signalhackerspaces.org, our yearly roundup radio show. We had some technical difficulties and also the panel is not fully assembled yet, but that's not holding us back. We start now in the configuration we have, and it's not a bad one, I can say that. On the decks is GMC, say hello.
Hello.
And we have HF from former Noisebridge and now Dresden.
Yeah, hello.
And there's Mitch Altman joining us again.
Hello.
And we have Aki from Telecomics.
Oh, hi.
Yeah. And as a special guest, I'm very proud to introduce Tim Pritlov.
Hi. Aren't the other guests special too?
They're all special. And another special one is coming here as well. It's Jeremy. Jeremy Zimmerman from Lakvatatur, isn't it? Always late.
It's chaos.
Yeah. Good. So what do we have for the listeners tonight? We'll take 2 hours to talk about the past year, the Congress, and especially the history of the Congress will keep us busy, I think. And therefore, I would like to start with Tim, who has a very long history with this Chaos Communication Congress. And Tim, can you start by telling us how you first came to the Congress? What was the first time you joined into this event?
Oh, good question. I'm not sure. I think it might have been 1984 or 5, so I don't really know if it was the first or the second Congress. I think it was the first, but I'm not totally sure.
Wow.
And I lived in Hanover then, and the Congress was, of course, in Hamburg. So that's like a 2-hour drive, and a friend of mine just brought me with him because he knew Vau and all the other guys, and I was pretty young. And that was a crazy scene, you know, people with metal detectors on the doors, checking people for cameras, special pricing for the press. It was weird, sort of paranoid and crazy group. And actually, I don't really recall what I thought about it. It was just interesting. And of course, there were a lot of computers I was also interested in, so it couldn't be as bad. But I didn't really spend much time with it. But I was part of a local hacker group in Hanover that didn't really consider itself to be like a part of the Chaos Computer Club. Now it's more or less common if you are into hacking, you're more or less connected to the CCC. If you call yourself CCC, doesn't really matter, but somehow it's just one big scene. But in those days, without communication, without digital communication, it was just a different story. And then time passed on, and I don't know, I've been there every now and then. But it took until the beginning of the 90s, 90, I don't know, 4 or something, that I was a regular visitor, and I somehow joined the CCC first in Hamburg, then in Berlin. Yeah. And there was this one day where Andy told me I'm a member of the CCC. Which was news to me. You are hanging around here regularly, so you're a member of the CCC. And I said, okay. And it's my... it's my habit. If I'm a part of a club, and if I really feel I am part of it and I really want to be a part of it, I have to do something. I just can't, hang around and be a member and that's it. Either I'm in or I'm out. So I was in. I had to do something, and I decided to engage into the event organization business. And that's how everything you know, moved along with me and the CCC.
And how was the Congress at the time when you first helped organizing it? When, I mean, we're speaking of a 28-year time frame here, and we hear a lot about the early days back in Hamburg, but we're in the 90s, it already was in Berlin, wasn't it?
No. So, here's the short history of the Congress. So, it started in 1984. And it went on until 1993, continuously at the location called Eidelstedter Bürgerhaus. And that's full if there are 200, 300 people. Then it's crowded. So there's no comparison to today. Everything was German. There were a few Dutch guys like Rob hanging around who knew to speak German. But there was no idea this could ever be some kind of international event, which is it now. And yeah, it was the German hacker scene, which was always very special because, you know, Germany was special. The way people were thinking about the state was totally different. And everybody knows why. You know, we had our share with dictatorship and so on and all that shit. And it was still going on in the eastern part. So this whole idea of 1984 and Big Brother sort of matched the way Germans thought. So the book was popular, more popular in Germany than it was everywhere else. And that was part of the spirit of the CCC. And this paranoia, sometimes paranoia is bad, but this was sort of a healthy paranoia. So what happened? For many, many years, this was just a very slowly growing scene. When, you know, the computer revolution was happening very slowly. Home computers, C64, Amiga, they all had their share in expanding this slightly, but it wasn't really like the big move. But then at the beginning of the 90s, when everybody started talking about computers more and networks were sort of coming up, there was the point where you really felt like, oh, now everybody is talking about cyberspace and talking about like networks and also, not for the first time, but again, it's like the hacker, the ideal image where you can project all your wishes and fantasies on, and the media was very busy doing this. And the effect was also that working with computers was cool for kids. And more came. And there was this very special congress in 1993, I think. It was the end of 1993. No, sorry. 90 later on. Sorry. 7. Yes, 7. Finally, everything was packed. You know, everybody had a computer. That was unheard of. Before, it was like 200 people, but we had like 10 computers, you know. There were not as many computers, and we were very far away from the idea that everybody was wearing three of them at any time. Yeah. But then everybody got a computer for Christmas, and they all brought these machines to the Congress. And computers were standing around everywhere, and everything was crowded, and it was totally clear that this was the end of the Congress as we knew it. It was totally clear that there wouldn't be any other Congress at this location. And so there was a lot of confusion in the CCC about this because, you know, that was a new situation and we had to deal with it. It was totally clear that next time there would be probably 400 or 500, far, far, far more than this building was able to handle. And also the CCC, in a way, was able to handle. And they went out for a search, finding a new location in Hamburg, which more or less failed. There was one location that was discussed, but it was, you know, it wouldn't have been a good idea. I saw it and I thought, no, this can't be it. But it was totally obvious that if nothing else was coming up, they would have gone for this one. And at that point, I was in Berlin and I was recalling a Linux Tag event and I was at this one location. Something was in my mind. And I just went there again, looked around, which was Haus am Kölnischen Park, which later on was going to host the next round of Congress events. And I looked around, it was, everything was just perfect. I thought like, oh yeah, we could put this in here, we could put this in there. It was just amazing, an old SED building, you know. It was like the old party school of the Communist Party of East Germany. The Huck Center was the old library, you know, where they taught communism. That was where we are going to hack for the next years. And yeah, that was a very fortunate moment because I was meeting the those who were running it. And I said like, yeah, here, we are the Chaos Computer Club. We are looking for a space. And maybe we could consider moving to Berlin if there was an option. And the owner of that organization, which is still the same group that's running the BCC right now, so we're still talking about the same people, he looked at us and said, at me, I was the only one talking to him, he said like, okay, first thing, this is going to happen. Don't worry. That was like the first thing he said to me. It's like, yeah, don't worry. We're going to make this happen.
So he already knew the CCC?
He knew the CCC. You know, when he heard CCC was on fire, he was like, yes, that's going to happen. Yeah, don't think about anything. Yeah, don't think about money. Don't think about organization. This is just going to happen. I said, okay. And so it went. And of course, there was a huge discussion in the CCC. It was a you can imagine that there were many, many people who just didn't like the idea of leaving Hamburg, which was considered to be like the home and birthplace of the CCC, and we've always done it like this, and so on. So there was a heated discussion, but in the end there was a voting, and the voting was clear. It was like, okay, let's try. Actually, it was the second time the Congress moved to Berlin. There has been another event in at the end of 94. At another location. And that was more or less a failure. That was didn't really work out. The location wasn't good and so on. So they tried it once and they said like, ah, no, Berlin, you know, we tried it once, didn't work. But this time it was different. And then this 15th Congress happened and we moved from probably 600 people who were there the year before to 2,500 in the next year. Sort of the participation exploded. But even the harshest critics of the original idea of moving to that space later on came to me and said like, okay, Tim, I spent 2 hours walking around and I looked at everything and everything is good, you know? It's still the same people. It seems as if we're just more, we're growing and maybe this was the right time to expand. So that was like the first real change in terms of accepting the fate that computing now was interesting to a lot more people. And for a few years we developed the event there. It grew slightly. We always hovered around like 3,000 people probably. And at one point in time we had to move to this location. We had to because the old one was closing. It was the same people as I told you before. So it was more or less clear that we were following. But the first Congress here, which was the 20th, was the one right after the second camp. So in a way, it was a disaster. But next year, the 21st Congress was sort of like, I called it Congress version 3. Because I wanted to, you know, design it in a different way. There were too many things that we have always done the way we've always done it, like publishing the program the day before and these things, you know? It was reality. It was like always like this. Because there was not enough participation in preparing the program. There was no real CFP. It was all just like happening and nobody was really planning it. So we put a lot of effort into that 21st Congress, and one of the reasons to do that was the original idea of expanding the Congress to an international audience. Because we knew we were doing a lot of things right, but it was totally, you know, there was always like a few people coming, like Emmanuel from 2600. He was more or less there all the time. And I always thought like, where's the rest? Yeah, where's the rest of the world? You know, here's something really going on, and we have to change. And it was, of course, a matter of language. It was a matter of how to address, how giving the opportunity to plan. You know, show something up front, have a website, and so on. Yeah, that's history now, and it worked. And the 22nd, 23rd Congress, we actively invited groups. So whoever we knew, like, you're living in the US, you know how to type, why don't you just do a talk? Yeah, we pay. We paid for the flights. So we just, like, invited incubators. Yeah, we just wanted people to come and see. And they were coming, they were stunned, you know, especially in that time. You know, US, what, you know, how it was like. In that decade. And then they came to Germany, a place they've never seen before, to a hacker conference. What could they expect? I don't know what they expected, but what they found was hackers in the center of the capital of Germany in a glass building, you know, with a joint in their hand while the police is busy catching people on the street for other criminal activities. So it was a different set. Different mindset. There were a meeting, it was a huge party, and I think it worked and it drew other crowds. And now this phase, this transition is sort of over. I think it's time for the next version. Okay, it was a long talk.
Yeah, we're talking about quite some years here and an incredible development. At the point where we are now, I think we may also need such a transition. There are problems currently at the Congress. I tried to get someone from CCC to speak about the discussion that's been going on about the too much people who want to attend. I think there were around 8,000 pre-sale accounts, and not even the half of the people can come in here. So there is a gap between the need and the amount of people we can accompany here. And also people are unhappy with some of the social directions the Congress goes. You know, all these talks, all these issues that have been discussed. And the question now is, which direction should it go? There are various scenarios being discussed, like bringing Congress back to Hamburg, bringing it to other locations. It looked like the search here in Berlin didn't find anything that is particularly pleasing to this type of event. And so the question is, will there be a move back to another city, maybe Hamburg, or will it split up? Some people say if we can change things, then like it is now, it cannot continue because we just gamble who gets a card and who not. And so you just have a few lucky ones at the end.
Well, I mean, if you think your program isn't doing the right thing, it's not the first thing to talk about which programming language you should re-implement it into. You have to think about what it should do. So I think the question now is, what do we want the Congress to become? You know, what are the issues? Of course, many people like to come, but we haven't really made any particular statistics on how many it's actually. I mean, there might be accounts, but does this mean they would have bought the ticket? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. So first things first, we have to think about what's wrong with the Congress and where should it develop into. I mean, I don't know if it would still work the same way if 10,000 people would gather at a huge location and just moving to another place just to have more people there. I mean, that's not a quality, that's a quantity. Mm. I mean, ask the others. I can't really answer this.
Yeah, I think...
I would love to answer.
Yeah, Jeremy.
We need more microphones here.
Can you hear me all right?
How long have you been here, Jeremy?
Well...
At the Congress. What was your first
one? It's funny because I was traveling around Europe some times ago and hooked by Vienna. I spent some time in Vienna and met that cool guy who was working in a vintage video game shop in Museumsquartier, and we go and drink a few beers. And he tells me, well, you like pixels and old machines and hacking stuff, and we shared a few MP3 files and so on. Then I heard this place called the Metalab. Maybe you'd be interested in going there. Metalab, right, okay. Then I remember that the next day. I look it up, Rathausstraße. And it was 15 in the morning or something, maybe 16 in the morning. And I see this place which was on the street, you know, and entered there, never heard of a hackerspace before, you know, just so cool people. I asked them, can you tell me about the place? And they were, yeah, see, we're doing this and that. And a few of them were awake at the time. And by the time we were chatting in the lounge, more and more people came, all the ones cooler than another. And we were having this friendly chat and drinking stuff and so on. And it happens that one of the guy I'm sitting on next to on the couch is the guy who was just programming the cool project I mentioned in the conversation, you know, and things like that. Very, very magic and cool, because, well, that was my culture. I just met people from exactly my culture, and I spent the night there. And in the morning, one tells me, "Well, see you at the camp, right?" The camp, and they showed me pictures from 4 years before. E-camp, you know, a thing with cool people. And I look at the photos and say, oh yeah, see you at the camp. And it's the first time I heard of the camp. And, well, it was massive. Had psychedelic experience without even taking psychedelic substances. Very, very, very impressed by the huge disco ball and the hammocks. And so people so well advanced in practicing a culture that was mine, that I felt instantaneously home, no? And so the first people saying, yeah, well, see you at the Congress. Oh, the Congress, yes, of course, the Congress. And that was my first Congress, the 24C3. And I attended all the Congress since then and tried to stay in Berlin as long as possible around the event. Actually, discovering the camp was my way of discovering Berlin. For all these years, I wanted to come here. You know, I'm a neighbor. I live in France. And I never came to Berlin and fell in love with the city as well. And so I come every year, and I had the fantastic honor to be able to speak there in Saal 1. Is I think the most beautiful room I've ever spoken into, and always the smartest audience. You know, the questions are always perfectly aimed towards helping you say more about what you wanted to say, but you know, you always forgot some things, and it's always just fantastic. And I meet all my people. And for a few years, I come without a laptop to the Congress, not for paranoid reasons, but because most of the people I would like to communicate to or chat with are here. And actually, even this year and the year before, when tickets were so scarce, I had this impression, yeah, people renounced early and said, well, there's no ticket, I couldn't get a ticket, so I won't come. But most of the people who came finally got a way to get into. You know, the some people took too many tickets, sold them, some exchanged the wristbands that are, so everybody managed to enter, but the people who made the way to here. And I wouldn't say everybody, because, well, we cannot evaluate those things, but I think it's a kind of a family. Well, family is maybe not the correct image, but we share cultural values. And I think that to me, at the core of it is Berlin. So when I hear moving the CCC out of Berlin, I talked with several members working on those issues, and I won't reveal, bump me in the elbow if I reveal anything that is confidential before I reveal it.
Go ahead,
please. But so I'm very much interested in those issues, and I heard that there were two locations that were bigger than this one in Berlin. One is a kind of, can I say that? Yeah, it's one is the Messe, that is this big conference hall that I happened to pass in front of it one, and it looked like a hangar, like a big dumb hangar, and it would be so expensive, I think, to go there. And another one is a hotel that would make the whole thing look like crap, and couldn't do the deco or just use any space like we use this space and reappropriate everything. Like BCC is also, well, is an important part of the event as well. But the two bigger ones are not options. And so when people talk about moving it somewhere else, it gives me the creeps. Can you imagine a C3 in Munich, for instance? No, the police would be arresting people every minute for whatever, I don't know. I may not even want to go there. With all due respect to people living in Munich who may listen to this. And I don't know Munich really well.
Munich is disgusting.
Yeah, but you're totally right. I mean, Berlin is part of the equation here.
It is. It is.
It's not the only reason, yeah. But it's definitely part of. I mean, as I told you, you know, like 600 in Hamburg, and we just moved to Berlin. It's not that we made any more. It's not that we told everybody now we're here. It was just happening in Berlin and was crowded like that.
And when you described that, I had this impression that going from Hamburg to Berlin was actually maybe, you know, zooming out and going from the map of Germany to the map of Europe and the world.
Yeah.
And so getting to this exchange hub that is Berlin and the exchange of all cultures and, well, people from everywhere, it was part of the transition to maybe Congress 2.0.
Yeah, if we would move to a different city, it must be like a place that we've always dreamed of, you know.
So
I don't know what that could be, actually.
Is the only option to build somewhere a CCC complex similar to the one that the BND is building on Schwarzkopfstraße that looks super cool?
I'm not sure we could spend the same amount of money on it, but it might be an option.
We can try to occupy it.
Yeah, I don't know.
You start and we watch you.
I think those days are over in Berlin, but yeah. We have to be creative. I mean, we could also be very creative in terms of how to sell tickets. I guess there is. I mean, we had resource problems in many years on various levels, and it was always a way of optimizing, placing things to a different place, just doing it differently. I believe in optimization when it comes to events, slowly evolving and trying to solve these problems by actually looking at them. And I think right now it's a lot of discussion. It's like what I said initially, you know, it's like, don't talk about programming languages here, talk about the problem and try to find a solution. And, you know, by changing only what is actually needed and really makes sense.
Yeah, I think you mentioned something important, because one of the issues that drives this whole discussion is the pre-sale system and who is able to attend at a conference and who's not. And we've heard cases of people who attended all the 27 other congresses before, but this one, it's the first they skip. Also, Emmanuel is, for example, not here. So some people obviously can no longer make it. And the question is really, is this a problem that you can solve by any filtering logic, by any distribution?
Emmanuel would have been in Berlin, he would have entered the Congress without a ticket. I mean, we wouldn't have let him outside the glass, would we?
Of course, but he's not here, so
but
he
could have
made a decision.
Maybe he had something, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Mitch would...
He didn't tell me why he wasn't coming, he just told me he wasn't coming, but yeah, you know, the thing is, the whole hacker scene around the world has exploded in a really incredible way. In 2007, a few hacker spaces started in the United States, and that served as an example for all the rest in the U.S. And many places around the world. But there were still, way less than 100 hackerspaces in 2007, and now there's 900 existing or forming, and more popping up all the time. It's incredibly cool. We need community. We need to get together and teach and share and learn. I mean, this is something deep inside of all of us. We yearn for this, and Congress is a place where we can come together and share our experiences, share what we know, share our projects, teach and learn. And it's incredible. I mean, what you said, Jeremy, and coming here the first time for me was 23C3. And I was one of the people invited here. Constanze heard me at Hope in New York and said, you should do this in 23C3. And I'm like, wow, I've never been to Germany. Okay. And it was, you know, totally, I was at home. I fell in love with Berlin. I've been coming ever since. I've got an arm full of these. I love it here, and I would love it if everyone could have the opportunity to come and experience what we all experience here, but it's just not possible. How do we grow something like this and keep some kind of spirit that this gives all of us, you know, just quantity certainly isn't it. We have to grow in a way that people who come here can take advantage of what we get from all of this. How do we grow it and keep that? I really don't know. If we go to, as was discussed, Tempelhof, which evidently said no to us, you know, how could we have done that? You know, Hitler's airport. It's kind of another interesting.
The architecture is wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the building is totally. I mean, it's no discussion. You just can't do a congress there, and all the other locations also have very, very basic flaws. Like this station you mentioned, that's a very open space. Yeah, there's no way you can provide the heat for people who are sitting there constantly for hours. You know, that it's just impossible. I don't believe it.
Yeah, and the space here is ideal for the number of people. So getting a place where people can feel at home and where we don't have to spend a fortune in brand new infrastructure, you know, where does that fortune come from? So if we
speak about maybe needing a new version of the Congress, Mitch, you've seen so many hacker conferences all over the world. What characterizes Congress for you? Is it in any sense different or special than the other conferences?
Look at his arm.
Yeah, this is the highlight of every year for me, ever since 2013.
But what makes it special?
You know, it's hard to put my finger on it. It is some of the coolest people in the entire planet come here, are attracted here. And for me, it's the people. You know, there's great talks here. I hardly ever go to them. I'm always teaching people how to solder, for one thing, but when I'm not, I'm just talking to people and learning from them all the amazing experiences of their life, you know, hacking related or not. But, you know, it's everyone who comes here, they're imbued with this ethos, the hacker ethos, whatever that is. People who love learning all they can.
Discuss of the Mac computers in the hacker community is something related to ethics that is a bit preoccupying, but whatever.
Well, yeah. Well, whenever I get a chance, I bash Apple too. So. you know, just because we need affirmative action for something that too many people think is cool when they're manipulated into thinking that it is. But I won't rant about that now.
You have a counterpart on a desk.
So. What is the hacker ethos? Whatever it is, we all have it, and we all want to be around other people who support us in finding more of that. And I think part of it is we all want to be all of who we are as much as we can and make things better for ourselves and those around us and take what exists, and there's a lot of resources available to make that happen. And we do that here.
Mm-hmm. What's the Noise Bridge motto again?
Be excellent to each other.
Yeah.
So you say that Mitch, you're saying that the main difference between the Congress and the other events is the people? I mean, are interesting people coming to other hacker events too? I mean, I don't believe.
Yeah,
that.
Certainly. I've never been to a hacker conference I didn't like, and I've been to ones all over the world. But there really is something incredibly special about this one. You know, 3,500 of my closest friends. You know, it's an amazing feeling. I feel at home every time I'm in a hackerspace, regardless of where it's been, and I've been to maybe 200 of them now. And I feel at home at every hacker conference, but none of them have this feeling of just, I don't know, just.
What about HF?
Yeah.
Is this the first time you're here? No.
No. I've been here since 20 something.
20 something.
Yeah.
20 how much?
21st or something. Yeah. I think the key here is like being around people, and I wonder if we really have to scale up in a way that like everyone can attend. Like, for example, if I look at me or if I look at Mitch, it's we see some talks, but not all. So we could at least exchange some people in a talk model. So maybe one way would be to have something like an amoeba, like spreading out. And for example, you have like Berlin sites around, which like where you could say the BCC itself and the Congress is the mothership. And you have like several little locations nearby where like special domains are located. So you could basically increase the hardware hacking area to a way larger place, and then you could like go there to meet the hardware hacking people. But I think it has to be like close and in Berlin, so it could be easily reached. Like you maybe spend 10 minutes max traveling from one place to the other.
But could then be an imagine option. When there's snow in the deepest winter with minus 20, you know?
Yeah. We're in Berlin.
We've discussed this as well. I mean, there are actually a few spaces around here that might, well, it might be possible to do something like this, but it's also an idea to have, you know, if you're only into one thing, then you tend to be stuck in it. Yeah. And we always want to, you know, if you're totally into hardware hacking, cool. But once you're here, you might be tempted into watching a talk that you, in a topic you've never, you know, imagined could interest you.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's what I took from this when I co-founded NoiseBridge, is that there are all these diverse people. And what makes it so incredible is that hanging out in the hardware hacking area, which I'm, of course, gravitated to as a hardware hacker, there are all these people that aren't necessarily totally hardware hackers, in fact, a lot, who will come by and say, what is all this? There's blinking lights, there's noise, cool. And I learned from them, and of course, I'm gravitating towards places I wouldn't have otherwise just because they're there. And I thought, wouldn't that be cool to have this incredibly diverse atmosphere in a hackerspace every day, every night, all day, all night, all year round at my hometown? And so NoiseBridge is, by design, a very diverse place where people of diverse interests are doing things concurrently. And with the crafting people right next to the hardware hacking electronic people, we necessarily find that there's suddenly LEDs being sewn into fabric, and if the kitchen's right next to it, which it is, there's LEDs in cakes. And so that kind of synergy is really important part of what makes this happen. I was actually thinking about finding a place for a bigger hardware hacking area where Saturn used to be, because it's really close, it's a short walk. But if the hardware hacking is all over there, are people who aren't totally into hardware hacking actually going to venture forth even a 3-minute walk? Yeah. I don't know.
I think it's a very difficult question how to split things up. I mean, even right now, there's so much going on. You cannot see everything. You always have to pick and choose. So, for example, Cafe Moscow was discussed as one supplementary building which is close, which you can reach without crossing a street. And it would allow a few hundred or even 1,000 people more. And isn't this also an idea to get at least a satellite inside one city, that we keep it in Berlin, but we have maybe a differentiation, like we have it now with Berlin Sites? I mean, Berlin Sites will move to May next year, but it worked well for them for 2 years to be the alternative security hacking thing besides.
Well, I mean, that might be an option. Actually, I think right now the problem isn't properly analyzed. I see a lack of German engineering on that problem. You know, I think we should take this problem apart into its pieces and try to find a very creative hackerish approach to it. You know, I don't know if this is going to solve the problem, just to give a direction how to think, how I'm thinking about this. It's like, okay, there might be people who want to be here all the time, but there might be people who probably only want to be here for 2 days. But there's no 2-day ticket. There's no planning on when people would actually come. So if people could more specify what they actually want, maybe the problem is already, you know, changing, not solved, but, you know, it's putting a different view on this. And if it's in the end you just buy 2 days and you find out you would like to have another day, if there would be like some kind of stock exchange of day passes, and just the week before Congress you get your actual ticket that allows you to be here in the first and the third day, and the other two you don't need, and there are two another slots, and so on. You know, just one way. Probably doesn't solve the problem, but I think it's always worth trying. We tried a lot. We tried a lot with this Congress, and every now and then there was severe change, like moving to a new location. That was severe because it changed everything. But in between, it was always optimization. Oh, what if we move this to this room? oh yeah, totally different, you know, walking distances change, things start working better, atmosphere for a certain group improved. That's always very important in that respect. So we have to be creative. Maybe other locations could solve the problem, but they open up new problems too, because then you need an extra place where you're checking tickets, you know, security questions arise. It's wardrobe usage is different, and communication, you need to have the same network there, so you need to span the local network over various places, the streaming, yeah, what all this. It's a lot of questions that come up. Also, if we move to a totally new location, for instance, there's some details people probably don't realize. When we moved in here, I mean, what do you think was the first thing we did when we knew?
The cabling.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, we checked this place from the ground up on every infrastructure detail we can up with. You know, it was a total scan of everything. And of course, we told them, like, you totally fucked up your planning with cabling. You know, like there was cat cabling and there was telephone cabling. I said, like, hello, 21st century, telephone cable, you know? Who are your consultants? Kick them. Over time, they're always following our recommendations. Okay. But so we knew more or less everything. But there's another problem. We are the biggest file sharing node now on the planet over these 4 days. And it's also because we have tons of gigabit uplinks. So where are these coming from? Okay. Because we made some... We sort of hacked a company to dig in a dark fiber at this place, which we are using to connect to the next provider room, and that's where the internet really starts. So it's not that we are connected to one provider, we are connected to the place where all the providers are, and that's why we can route to potentially every provider, and I think it's four always, something like this. So these are also things that a new location needs. Yeah, I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm just saying lots of things to it, and it's not an easy discussion.
I wanted to come back to a point you made, Tim, about yes. Segmentation, having all kinds of different tickets going on. Of course, we with the Dutch camps think about this as well, because it's also expanding, and where do we go? Do we want to just take bigger fields and add 10,000 people on there? If you start a segmentation, one thing we fear is that you then also get extra checking. I mean, there's a lot of the atmosphere of these events is people go there and it's one thing, everyone is there, just they are there, period. There's no checking, no gates that you have to navigate, no security, really. I mean, that's one of the things that has stopped us from going into that direction yet. So I'm not sure if that would be a cool thing to do.
To expand or to segment, what do you mean?
Yeah, to segment so that you can buy a ticket for just the talks or a ticket to just hang out at the lounge.
No, I'm just talking about days.
Yeah, okay.
I'm not talking about different parts of the... Because that's not what I want. I want people to be here and get immersed in it. But if they can for sure say that I'm going to be just here for 2 days, that's a fact. You know, they come and they leave, and then the other days, they're not here.
And there is a capacity problem with Saal 1. That is also a structural issue. Now, Saal 1 is always, always full, whatever the topic. So it's such a complex logistics. I managed to attend Corey's talk, but I was too late for Tor talk because my own talk was ending. And so it's very complicated also. If I may, I'll try to be brief. An idea came to my mind. I was trying some ideas, but when you talked... when you talk, Mitch, maybe about the global movement of hackers making hacker spaces, it just connected the dots. And often, when some cool hackers talk together, some ideas come out, and we look at solutions. And two things: those events like No Nerd Left Behind that organize in hacker spaces work well. I think they work incredibly well. So maybe this is one way that the design of the event could be more rhizomatic, grow like mushroom from places to places and connect infrastructurally with better tools, or I don't know, the different places where some people might prefer stay in their hometown to attend the Congress, when some other will move to Berlin or whatever. Some will take part in their hometown of having a distributed Congress.
I think that's already implemented.
Yeah, it's already implemented, but could be promoted and enhanced in a way that that would be meaningful. And also I have this this idea about the lounge. The new lounge. So it is a sensitive issue to me because I was particularly fond of the lounge in the basement. And I nicknamed it my office. And well, the fantastic sound, the Berliner sound, you hear that, and so on. And it was moved this year on the sidewalk. Well, it's a bit colder, but that's all right. But there is glass panes. A whole corner of the lounge has glass panes, which to me is kind of disturbing on a pure privacy point of view, and this was quite discussed in the lounge itself. But it made me think of why not taking the whole sidewalk to build extra rooms outside of BCC like this one? Why not making a structure 3 or 4 times bigger than the lounge and make it a place where, I don't know, the talks could be projected and hardware hacking and whatever. Isn't that an option to try to grow BCC a bit?
Let me respond to both parts. First of all, you're totally right. We haven't really talked about this. This No Nerd Left Behind, how it's called this time. It's sort of already turning into the International Hacker Video Conference here. Yeah. And maybe we're not that far away from it. You know, bandwidth is expanding. We know that. And in the end, living this Congress as a worldwide event that sort of, you know, grows into every possible place on this planet, that's an option. That's probably something we should pursue. Many people are totally happy with this because the streaming quality is so high that it's actually easier to stay home if you just want to see all the talks. You know, coming here to see all the talks is it's nonsense. Anyway, you know, you're not making 10% of what you might be interested in. So if you want to be here, then you've got something to show. You want to talk, you want to meet, you want to be part of the scene, that's fine. And that might be more people interested in that we can host. But it's not that we don't have anything to offer to those who we can't host. So for sure this can expand. This tent thingy is a funny story in itself because it's sort of an accident. It wasn't really planned. The short story is that usually, you know, lots of smoking going on, so that room has to be cleaned afterward. You know how they do this? I didn't know that before.
High pressure.
Yeah, actually, they're sealing the room, and then they fill it with ozone and keep the ozone in for a couple of days, and then it's fine again.
where do the ozone go?
That's what happened here in the last year. Oh. I always thought, like, my God, so like smoking like hell, it stinks like hell. What are they doing with this room? But I never really thought this to an end. And then I got this information that, yeah, we're sealing it, and for 3 days we're cleaning it. But there was an accident in planning, and they actually planned another event right after the Congress, so they couldn't do the cleaning. And that's why they said, like, okay, it's our fault because they didn't tell us. So they paid for the tent. This is a very expensive tent. So putting a tent outside, it's in theory it's possible, yeah, but it would be very expensive, and next year we would definitely have to pay for it as well. Well, also, another limitation, there are two limitations. There's the limitation of how many people we think this place can endure and when it gets uncomfortable. But then there are also fire regulations that simply state, like, there is a maximum of 3,000 people at any time that might be in this building. And you can build as many tents as you want. It doesn't really change this number. So it's not really a solution. Although in general, I think expanding, and I like this tent in a way. It's like really you're leaving the building in a way. Then you're in this off space where there's music and lounge, and you can return to the hacker world again. Although you're not really leaving the hacker world, of course, but you know what I mean.
Except for the corner.
Yeah, it's a very complex problem. And in that sense, maybe I can see a competition coming up for finding a good solution. I mean, if anybody is good in solving complex problems, it's this scene.
Free ticket.
Yeah, free ticket for the solution for the rest of your life. And more.
Yeah. Do you know how this decision will be made inside the CCC? Is it at the end democratic? Do people decide?
I wouldn't. Democratic. I don't know if democratic would be the right word to put it. I can't really tell you how we do the decisions. It's just happening, you know. People who are involved and there are people who are more involved, and in the end enough people have to be persuaded that this is the way to go and we need to try it, and then again it just needs somebody who says like, okay, I'm just going to pursue this way, and I'm capable of enduring all the shitstorms that are coming up. I know what I'm talking about. You know, you've got a lot of shitstorms if you're making decisions, you know. And you just have to stand with it and know it's right. You know, there was this day for the second camp. Who's been at the first? Has anybody been here at the first or second camp? No, right? No. So, but you know the rocket outside. You know.
Oh yes.
And there was a day this rocket didn't exist, and then there was the day everybody knew this rocket exists. But this was like the second day of the second camp. The first day of the camp, nobody knew this rocket exists because it didn't exist. It was still being built by people, but we made it a very secret project. It was actually only three people who knew about it. And then bang. In the night, we put this up, this rocket, and nobody even noticed it because they were all still tired from, you know, coming. So everyone was kicked out by the sun coming up and putting the heat into their tents, and like the apes in 2001 were like sort of moving like, oh, rocket, what's going on? We put on the 2001 music as well. It was like one of the best moments of my life. Also sprach Zarathustra. So that was like the total surprise. And of course, we spent a lot of money on this. It was really one of these things like, hey, look, it's cute, and it was super expensive, you know? And it was like 10% of our budgets. Like, what in hell? You just have to make these decisions. So democratic, never, there wouldn't have been a rocket. Anyway. So I think it's very difficult to answer who is making the decisions in the CCC. It's a process that's very complicated, but in the end it has always worked more or less.
Yeah. Because we are still on Pi Radio, we have to play a jingle now, as it's the new hour. GMC.
Sie hören 88.4
Pi Radio. Sie hören Pi Radio.
Good, and there we are back again. I think we talked enough about Congress, its past and its future, and we'll go now to other topics. And I would like to come to one of our guests who has been silent so far. That's Oki from Taylor Comics.
Yeah. I'm silent because I'm a bit shy. There's a lot of people here doing amazing stuff, and I'm a bit impressed being live.
You do amazing stuff too.
Yeah.
Yes.
You do amazing stuff, and I think Taylor Comics had quite an amazing year, so why don't you tell us about it?
Okay, so the year started around the 16th of January, I think. Some microphone problem. Okay, better. So the year starts with a Tunisian event where people are going to throw out the dictatorship over there. And this is when telecomics began to move, because before that we were more acting like civil rights groups and trying to work with Europe on different laws like the telecom packets, stuff like that. And we were relaying news about freedom of communication all over the world. And then we saw the Tunisian stuff. We found that it was monitored, censored, and they were oppressed for that, and they were fighting for that. and we just and they were just asking for help, basically crying, for saying, hey, we need to communicate, we need way of communication. So we start in Tunisia by relaying the information using the Streisand effect, which is basically, okay, this website is censored, we're going to take it and put it everywhere online on different IPs, different DNS. And we began stuff in Tunisia, then Egypt, and that was in February, I think, when Hosni Mubarak decides that he cannot manage internet anymore, so he just basically shut it down. So we faced a blackout. There was people in Egypt that need to communicate, they're using smartphones, they're using Twitter, Facebook, and they basically were unable to organize themselves because that's why they need to communicate. And we just, hey, okay, we're hackers, what can we do to help them? And basically we just stumbled upon some good old 56K modem and stuff like that. So we just plugged them everywhere in Europe, in Germany, in France, etc. And we just take a book with a fax number from Egypt and, okay, let's spam the fax because fax works. So we just basically spam the faxes with instruction in English and in Arabic to, okay, this is how you can use your old 56K modem to communicate. Do it. We can help you, and we will support you to communicate freely and without fear. So this is, I think, the stuff we did that make us famous, something like that. And people just was, okay, a bunch of people somewhere on the internet just can counter a government. Because, well, it's a government with a lot of people, a lot of money, a lot of means. They have the end of the on the switch. They can shut it down. But still, we can communicate with them. We tried AIM radio, but AIM radio doesn't work that well because it was mainly a military system. So we just, okay, let's go. Let's use old technology and let's find new ways to communicate and let them organize themselves. This was something very exhausting because we were some of them were online. 22, 23 hours a day, just checking that everything working, that everything is going fine. And, well, we are not superheroes. We need some sleep. We need some rest. We need to disconnect ourselves from some problems. So we ran into some problem in Egypt. And then we've got a lot of people coming on the chat at a time that it was like there was 500 people connected on the telecom packet chat back in the day. So there were too much people, too much thing, too much pressure, a lot of stuff happening. Good stuff, because people can communicate. The Tunisian and the Egyptian finally throw up the dictatorship to move to something else. And we were still working on it. We wrote the Datalov principles that are on datalov.me, which is basically data must flow and nothing should interfere with the flow of data. Then it was the camp, my first camp, where we more or less first meet in the meet space. There was telecomics agent from all over the Europe, and we met in the meet. And yeah, okay, we're not alone. We all have the same problem with being online 22 hours a day because it's exhausting. And then Cameron, our leader, ordered to shut down, to just have a break. So this is where in the summer we do the telecomics talk at the camp, and we just say, okay, we're shutting down now because it's needed. We have too much people, we have not enough time, we need to think about what we want to do or to stop, or we don't know if we're going back online at one day. Just, we need to stop. Because we're not a tech support system, we're doing tech, we're doing stuff, we're building VPN, we're building darknets. We try to help people to use Tor and system like that and to prevent themselves, but we're not a service provider. We can't provide a services 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's not what we want to do. We're not a company. We want people to be autonomous. We want people to work on themselves and build their own thing and grow their own thing and make this kind of stuff on their own. And at the same time, we were starting to work on Syria. So we were shutting down and still working and doing a lot of stuff. It's a duocracy system in telecomics. People just do things, and it might or might not work, but people do things. And when we came back online, we were having few less people. It was rounded to 200, 300 people connected on the Telecom Exchange. And we were working, well, pretty much the same way, but we knew that we can't stop being online. We knew we can't take a break. Because the Opus area works pretty fine with Kerb, Spunk, Bob, and some other people that are doing an amazing stuff on the Opus area. And we knew that the world didn't stop to work because we were offline. That was the hard, the lesson I think we have, that takes us a lot of time to learn, because we do not want to shut down the internet. We're fighting for freedom of communication, freedom of cryptography, stuff like that. And we were thinking, we are the only one standing there, and because people asking for help every time. So we just stopped everything for a month or two, and just we get back and saying, hey, we're back online and go on, etc. And things works, and now we have more. My English is a bit broken. We have some more time to think about stuff. Sometimes we just that's basically except one or two people, but basically there's no one on Opus area because we're here in the camp, in the Congress. We cannot do, we cannot meet and work on the Opus area. So it happens, but it's like that.
I remember the interview I did with Stefan Urbach on the camp on the day before he gave his talk and Telecom shut down. And one of the few things he said was that Telecomics is only a small group of people who actually do stuff, and many people talk, but you feel left alone and you feel exhausted by all the pressure coming from those people depending on your infrastructure now, and basically you're doing sysop for a whole country. And he was blaming also the hacker scene for that. He was blaming the people who always clap their back and think what they do is great, but no one is actually helping them. And I think this was part of the reason for this shutdown. And now we are 4 months later. Have you seen a change? Do you now have more active supporters where you can distribute this pressure?
Well, yes and no. I was at the Turkish talks I did on day one or day two in the Congress, and they're doing amazing stuff without us. They're just fighting against the laws that are censoring their internet. So basically, stuff still working. The thing is, we are not extremely hyper technician. We do not write exploit. We do not write Tor. We do not write this kind of amazing software that we use every day. We just take this software and works with the people that vote them and try to make them work and pull them in the actual battlefield. Because Tor works pretty fine in France and countries like that, because we have no such high censorship laws. But in Syria, which is a country with a very, very small internet, it's around 150,000 IP address for all the country. Basically, no one used Tor. No one doesn't know that Tor exists. So we have a country which is mainly cut off the internet through heavily monitored the system. And we need to send Tor over there. We need to be sure that it is a good Tor, not a pirated one, not a cracked one with no spyware inside. And to explain to people who do not speak English how to install it and configure it and how they can use bridges and stuff like that. So the hacker scene do a hell lot of great job. Without the technicians and all the people that vote the excellent software, we cannot do anything because we have to vote the software. We're more like practical. We work on practice. We try to find a way around a shutdown, around the monitoring. We just hack systems, not computers. We just hack systems. We hack infrastructure. We hack the data flow. Because Syrians can't communicate every day. The internet is not shut down in Syria. It's just heavily monitored. When we found the Syrian logs, the 56 gigabyte archive, we found on an open FTP in Syria because there was no security over there. When we found this, we saw that, okay, they can follow one person on the internet, they can see that, okay, he goes on Gmail, he goes on YouPorn, he goes on YouTube, he just used Skype to call his girlfriend. He was Twitter on this stuff. We have very use of data all the day, which is a good thing because computer can think about some stuff we do not want to think about, like, okay, am I late? Do I have an appointment? Okay, my computer knows that. I do not have to know that.
Jeremy, you've been very active with net politics in France and Europe. How do you see the work of Telecomics? I mean, they...
Well, I see it like a children we wouldn't be proud of, like all of us. Like the internet got birth to this weird children that is Telecomics, and it's getting older and kicking ass, you know? I'm proud of it, you know, like...
Yeah, but we do not want to kick ass. We just want people to communicate.
That's not your problem with people... think you kick ass. I mean, you don't have to argue against that. You know? I'm, since the beginning, very much impressed by the how well Telecomics achieved to be a non-structure. Because with La Quadrature du Net, the organization I co-founded and I'm spokesperson of, we tried very hard to be a non-structure. We all had in mind examples from associative world where people get into a Verein, an association or whatever, and there's a president and a board and a blah, 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 and blah, 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 and then you end up doing structure. So we said, okay, we are co-founders, and we just speak in our name of co-founders. We have no members, no legal entity, not member of anything. Telecomics is one step beyond the non-structurality, if I may, of activism. And for this, it is at first extremely important. Okin, I think you should have specified when you say Cameron or leader, it sounded a bit too hierarchical compared to the reality of Cameron being...
Yeah, but she ordered the shutdown, so it's our leader.
Yes, you should tell us more about your leader.
No, she's a bit shy.
Yeah.
But it's quite impossible to design a non-organ, such a thing exists. It's not like you say we are going to make it now.
And well, it's fascinating to watch, but I think that we're getting to that era of non-structured entities that grow and grow as rhythms and tend to get power. If we look at the last month, we've seen WikiLeaks teaching to the masses the power of information and what you can do by publishing things that were hidden. We've seen the Arab Spring where the internet was infrastructure for people from all around countries that were very, with sometimes very poor network of infrastructure for communication between the people in midspace to organize and throw away dictators. We are seeing right now in the US a movement against SOPA that is of no comparable scale with anything I remember on those issues before. And what we may achieve with ACTA in the European Parliament, I hope, will be of the same order of magnitude, especially when you look at how much, SOPA is a sum of ACTA plus the attacks of the US government against WikiLeaks. So SOPA is what a word will look, what a legislation will look when ACTA is adopted. So we'll help our friends in the US to defeat the motherfucker, as well as they will help us, I hope, in the EU to defeat it, because it's the very same. There's no such thing as one ADOPI, one SOPA, one ACTA, blah, blah. And so at the same moment, we all visualize how globalized is the threat on a free internet. It's not ADOPI in France, Les Cindy in Spain, whatever Bundes thing in Germany. It's global policies pushed by global corporations on a global scale. And on the other side are structures that achieve global influence and or presence of outreach that are completely evanescent, that don't have a head, don't have a center. Look at Anonymous, Look at the Occupy movement. Also, such examples. I stopped at WikiLeaks and Telecomics, but WikiLeaks, Telecomics, Occupy, those movements in the Arab countries, all those movements are very similar. And in non-structuration, I mean. And so what fascinates me is that I've been doing the shit with the parliaments for quite some time now, for too long. I can say it because, you know, it's family. But I'm bored with it at the moment. The parliaments don't excite me as much as they did, or I don't know. And especially in France, where the majority is completely locked down. On the European Parliament, sometimes you get something to move because there is no, you know, opposition, majority, blah, blah, blah. But various groups and various sensibilities. And I still think that the European Parliament is the place for citizen opinion in the EU institutions, but they are ill as a whole, as our global financial system is ill, as our global energy policy is ill, our global effect on environment is ill. And so we're here with a global threat, with global problems, and global communities using global tools to help solve the problems. Well, I think we're living in very interesting times.
That for sure, and I would love to believe the picture you just gave us. We again have problems with the technique. Oh my god! Good.
We love Jeremy.
Yeah, good. We're back. The question is, I mean, you made quite a big bridge here from Telecomics over WikiLeaks to Anonymous. And, I mean, yes, there are new possibilities to organize and to communicate through the internet, but the goal of all this movement, I mean, it's protest. That's what they have in common. But do you really think that this can achieve something? Just global outrage that's loud enough can replace this parliamentary work you've been doing for the last years?
First of all, I didn't say it was easy. Second of all, I didn't say that we will solve those global problems. I made a link between these, and I'm profoundly convinced that this global infrastructure we are sharing and caring about every day is part of the solution. We cannot get solution without this global, universal, therefore neutral, open and free infrastructure that we build every day. So this is what I'm doing and explaining to some targets within parliaments and some political systems, and more generally to citizens to help them make them aware of that. So we serve as some kind of we're a toolbox. We provide tools for people to get some political analysis on events that concern technologies and the internet and all everyday freedom. And what I see through those unstructured movements is more and more young and talented hackers. Anonymous is, I'm not approving the whole of Anonymous, and some actions I would clearly condemn when some personal data is just published and not anonymized or things like that. But you all felt like me that, well, some of them are 16 years old, no? Or 18 or 20 or whatever. And sometimes on TV you see two 16 years old kids who clicked Loic software or whatever. This is part of it as well. And even if it's young and it's a wrong way of doing something, I feel that hackers get more and more politicized. A few years ago, the word politics was even taboo. And people were, well, no, I wouldn't make statistics, but so many cool hackers told you, I don't even vote. No, I don't want to hear about this shit. They get the fuck off and yeah, none of my business. Now everybody understands that those issues are political and are at the center of a global game of influence with corporate actors that don't want us good, that may not be not evil after all, and things like that. So I think more and more people understand, and this is the part on which I'm optimistic.
Mm. Tim?
You're so right, Jeremy, you know? I know that feeling 10 years, 20 years ago. I mean, coming to the CC scene, this German hacker scene, you know, the world is Groundhog Day somehow, you know. It's like 20 years ago we were talking about, you know, technology is going to change and influence society and this is going to be much more important and there are issues to come up and we need to look at the chances and the risk of technology and so on. And now it's 20 years later and it's the same story. But now it's on TV and everybody is talking about it and even the newspaper writing about it. And yeah, it's interesting times we're living in. Isn't that a Chinese curse? and in a way, the most interesting story of this year, I think, is the Telecomic story. Because it's a new name, you know, that was unheard of with mostly people that were unheard of, that shows that it's it doesn't need much to actually make a difference. And it's not that we need the well-established organizations, you know. It's like not the CCC is going to save us, and if it's no longer there, we're not going to be saved. it's there is this very interesting movement of hackers, and I'm not going to idolize this, but it's totally clear that we need those people who really know about the technology building the bridges where we can walk along. And if it's a tunnel to Syria to allow communications there, then that's a part of the job. So Telecom is just did it like for a very special purpose. But if we if we find a way to build bridges for the even bigger problems, which is not only a technical problem, it's like going around the Chinese firewall, it's also language. Well, look at Europe. We might be a union on paper, but there's a huge gap between individual countries. And it's all about language in a way. Might be culture, but I think language is just the main problem.
Let's not get started on the EU.
Yeah, but who is going to solve that problem? You know, and I think those who are aware of the internet and that you don't have to educate about what you can do with it because they just know and feel it are probably the ones. You know, it's a matrix situation. The movie is right in a way. Yeah.
In which sense, the Matrix situation?
Yeah, you think you live in a world that works like this, but it's something completely different, you know. And you have to make your way out of this. It's people need to understand what the issues are, and it's an awakening. And I think what also is part of this process of hackers becoming more political is that they are sort of waking up. Until now, it was all funny, you know, gadgets, soldering, haha, cool, here, I can remote control this, I can remotely stabilize this, and now it flies, and it's all funny, and we love it, and it's part of the culture, and it makes us happy beings also. We are political, but on the other hand, we've got tons of fun with it as well. It's a very playful way of revolutionizing the world.
It's important.
It's totally important. But on the other hand, the politics are becoming more important now. I can also see this happening. And that's why I'm mentioning Telecomics, because this is a very specific urge that sort of was breaking out and needed some kind of solutions. And this small organization went through all possible phases from total, you know, we need to do something, and then excitement and success, to totally depression and fail and the rebirthing, and now things are more or less stabilizing. Yeah,
Well, not quite. We're not quite stable. We're a bit like chaotic and such. We've got a lot of stuff with Kazakhstan, with Cuba, with Russia. Well,
yeah, chaotic is the most stable state.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, even in the U.S., people are becoming more political, and that was one of the things that really struck me the first time I came to Chaos Congress, was that there were people openly talking politically. In the U.S., people just don't do that. In San Francisco, there's more people doing that, which is maybe one of the reasons I feel more at home in San Francisco. Noisebridge has been one of the few hackerspaces where people do that, much more like people around Europe. But in the U.S. now, with the Occupy movement just erupting out of nothing, but of course, in the context of the rest of the world in the Arab Spring, helping it along. Everywhere there's an Occupy movement where there's a hackerspace, the hackerspace people are helping out, which I find incredibly positive, with hackathons and doing tools for media and people communicating through apps on the web and whatever, including people who are using quadricopters and octocopters, whatever, for filming police raids and seeing people tear gassed and whatever in ways that wouldn't have been possible without hackers using the tools that people created merely for fun, used for very practical political purposes and very powerful, that can be shown on even mainstream media.
If I may, a small anecdote on that. I was in Barcelona at the Free Culture Forum organized by my sister Simona. You should meet her if you don't know her already. This time it wasn't as international as it was before because of the importance of the Occupy Indignado, whatever you call it, movement in Spain. It was one of the first ones, the M15 it is called. And I was there with all those people from Spain, and saw that most of the hackers were there. They have a group called Hack 15 that is part of the M15 movement, but not only part of. They were the first ones to settle tents on Puerta del Sol. They organized the network of communication between all the cities where there were camps. They developed ad hoc social networks and tools for campaigning for the event. They were one of the major drives behind the M15 movement in Spain.
I think it's no doubt that hackers can be quite powerful allies in political activism. I'm always wondering why, at which stage hackers get political. I mean, the CCC is an exception in this sense, because I think it has been political from the beginning onwards. And you see other movements in France, Austria, and also the States, where it's totally different, where people would have resilience against being seen as political. They don't want to influence any political system or being public with what they do. And this changes. I think it's changed before because the pleasures of technology are in danger in some areas. We really see that we get more and more restrictions on that, as you pointed out earlier, and this I think should be a awakening call, but the question is if we can get this word out faster. I mean,
we don't need to. It's like, especially when I look at the Occupy movement, especially the way the US cracks down on them, it shows that those in power, in quotes, are scared. And I think when people see that I'm cynical, that a bunch of hippies can scare the world police, I think that politicizes them. And it's like the internet and hackers giving them just tools in this overcomplicated world, which like gives ordinary people a way of sovereignty, a way of govern their immediate social situation. And I think that in the end politicizes everyone. So I don't think there needs to be too much of like accurate propaganda. It's more like giving people back sovereignty and at least the hope that they can change things.
Mark, you also joined the table quite late, but I'm happy that you're here. We're speaking about hackers and politics, basically. Have anything to add to that?
Well, no, I'm sure I missed some of the greatest parts as I listened to you guys talking about who. How am I doing, everybody?
Now we can hear you.
All right. We'll do it live.
Do you have another headphone for him?
No, I'm all right. But so I was listening to you guys talking about at what stage hackers become political, and I look around.
I've spoken here now.
I guess 5 years in a row,
I kind of try and measure if people are attending the talks that have to do with world problems. You know, are those rooms full or not? You know, and I'm not always. I would love to give you just the good story, like, yeah, we're totally turned on now and paying attention. But I think that, you know, the Matrix reference is still quite appropriate. It's painful to unplug from your easy. Well, it's not necessarily easy, but somewhat satisfying or placating world. And many people can continue to choose not to go along with what's going on. You know, I followed the Occupy movement. I was there for much of it, not all of it, in Amsterdam. And it's a unique animal there compared to other countries and cities. But I also noticed how an alarming amount of people simply had no idea what was going on months after it had started, or a month after it had started, because it is so possible to ignore this, just like so many things in life. So, not that I expected everyone to suddenly wake up, but I guess I always want better, and I was a little bit disappointed that more, at least in the Netherlands, more people didn't wake up to it. So, you know, why is that? Because you can still ignore, and you can still, even though there's a crisis, I mean, for a lot of people, okay, you cut back a little bit, but life is more or less what it was, and there's the assumption that the economy goes down, it'll go up, and this is a balance in life somehow. I mean, a lot of people really believe in this, like the economic system is like nature, it balances itself out. You know, if you start talking to people who pay closer attention to history, and they'll tell you that that's not necessarily true at all. But there's this odd belief, and I understand it, because there's not that much horror, not enough horror going on, you know, right in Mitte in Berlin or wherever. And so you can stay sleeping, and people do. I guess I'm starting to get at the fact that maybe things have to get worse. I'm not really preaching or advocating for things to get worse, but I see how it's still easy to stay asleep, even for hackers.
Does it bring us back to the discussion of the use of Mac hardware with?
right. Passionate about those discussions, which are not unimportant.
Oh,
there's lots.
Oh,
of
no,
opinions.
No. Well, on the regard to free software and freedom in general, that hackers get comfortable with blingy, shiny, easy access technology.
Yeah. And that's the thing, you know, I don't know if you brought it up, but hackers, first of all, we can't speak about hackers in general, really, but we try, right? They're consumers. They're a consumer group, not all of them, but they are consumers, and they make consumer-ish choices, and there's trends, and there's a crowd logic, or what do you call that, group logic, group think, and some people break out of it, thankfully, and push it, and that's good. But we have, I think, similar problems to mainstream society. We have a large amount of people who are... I like sheep, but let me, you know, hurt sheep for a moment and say they're sheepish, right? They follow. I understand how that happens. It's just a shame that it does happen, even amongst hackers. You want me to say good things?
Oh, no, it's, you brought me to a point where I'm hoping someone else will continue.
I'm sorry, I'm responsible for trolling about free software and Apple.
I can add. What's wrong?
I've had a really, really good time.
What's wrong?
Yes, it's a matter of freedom, not of functionality.
Moderate your shiny things.
Yeah, well, the thing, you know, hackers, you know, we're all human, and we, as humans, we are all capable of absolutely everything we can imagine that humans can do. That's what human nature is. It's not that human nature is good or bad, but certainly some things feel better than others, and some things feel worse. And we're surrounded by the culture that we were all brought up with, all of us. And not all of that is good. And the cultures that we're all brought up in encourages all of us to stay asleep, to consume, to just do what we're supposed to do. The hacker community, one of the reasons I fell in love with it and felt so at home is there's way more people in our community who are exploring other possibilities. And it's not that it's a perfect thing, you know, we're humans. But we're pushing the envelope in incredible ways that other communities I just don't see happening. And with the Occupy movement,
that's unprecedented. It's incredibly unprecedented. It's not just hackers doing it. Hackers are pushing it where it's happening, which I'm really happy about. But, you know, it's the hacker movement happens just before this Occupy thing. I don't think this is a coincidence. I think these are symptoms of something bigger going on. And there are people really waking up to the reality that this is not all okay enough. And, you know, you're talking about maybe things aren't bad enough. It's kind of, you know, like people who are addicted. You keep doing what you're doing in a habitual way, an addictive way, until things get so painful to continue. You know, talking personally, you know, I've done this several times in my life. I am afraid to change even though I know I need to, but when things get so bad and it's so painful to continue in the way I have been going, that's more painful than the possibilities of changing. And that's when I take a step, a leap, maybe even a leap of faith. And I see that happen in society as well. And I think that's what's happening now. We have so little community in our lives. We need connection. And people are going to find it some way. Hackers, I think, have led the way towards that. And I think that's a lot of why the Occupy thing happened. I don't think it would have happened if all of us haven't created a hacker scene, you know, all of us collectively, not just in the room, created a hacker scene that is in the mainstream. And we've gotten a lot of positive mainstream press, which is really incredible. And the mainstream, even the U.S., even Fox News, is not consistently negative about Occupy. You know, it's hard to do that. And the Fox News isn't even all negative about things like Telecomics and Arab Spring. You know, it's like, or Tor, for that matter, or WikiLeaks, because the mainstream press even needs stuff like this in order for them to have some autonomy in existing. So all of this is adding together, and the economic collapse, so many people have roles that they thought they'd be playing all their lives, and they're no longer there. They need opportunities. We all need opportunities to live more fulfilling lives, and at least a life, if not more fulfilling lives. And all of us are, in some way, making those opportunities for people. We don't even know what we're doing, necessarily. And it's really exciting time. It's not perfect. Sure, things are probably going to get a lot worse. I'm not looking forward to that. There's probably going to be a lot of trauma for a lot of us, maybe us personally in this room. Who knows? But hopefully we're doing what we can to create opportunities for ourselves and those around us that others can key into. Who knows the possibilities? What'll happen? It's exciting to be a part of. Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, it's a curse. But yeah, it's incredible as well. You know, here we are. We're alive. Let's make the best of it. It's amazing.
I should have said that.
Yeah. You missed. You missed.
I went in with the whole sleeping thing. Oh.
You've been late. No, but... I think we followed this discussion so far that we can leave it there, although we have still 30 minutes left. But I think it's time for end statements and maybe some good wishes for the next year.
Oh. What are we looking forward to next year anyway?
Will you be at the Congress next year?
Let's start with that. I'll be at the Congress, but I'm looking to change up a little with what I've been doing. And
yeah, you missed the subject. The first hour was totally Congress, and Tim told us the big history of it, which was really great. And we spoke about current problems, or not problems, and future scenarios.
But for my part, I'll be here for sure, and I'm just looking to be useful and also to make it to keep it interesting for myself. So I'll be back. Yeah.
Okay.
That's not my final thought.
Yeah. Oh my god.
But I leave it to go ahead, please.
I mean, with the microphone, just make them all on.
Yeah, but if you're moving it, I want to.
I'm not moving it if it's on. I'm only moving it because it's off. I don't know. I think the political discussion is over, and I don't know. Looking ahead, I'm not willing to predict the future. I just know what I want to work on, and that's a very subjective and very personal thing for me, you know, which is totally, well, not totally, but somehow detached from what is going on in general. I mean, my pet project still is this whole podcasting media stuff, and I still see big opportunity in this. It's an ongoing discussion with Mark somehow. He's always, I mean, I'm not saying you're...
what happened to me?
What should I say, Mark?
I'm not always...
Could you elaborate that?
I think I'm more optimistic than you are, but apart from this... it's interesting to see that media publication is also a part of this whole hacker movement, or however we should call it. There are really interesting developments that just go alongside this whole trend that somehow started in 2003, blogging. I think that was sort of the birth year of like where blogging was called blogging and everybody started doing it and they saw the impact of it, and in a way it took a long time to really catch on with a larger audience, but we've seen blogs succeed in many ways, and it's interesting to have different channels, and right now it feels so normal already. It's like it's not even 10 years this technology exists, but just like, oh yeah, well, I'm thinking of writing a blog on this and that, and that's just a very normal thing you could do these days. It's like, yeah, nobody is totally super excited, like, oh, a blog, or do you really think that somebody's going to read it or something like this? And it's like,
it's even old fashioned already.
Yeah, it's normal. I mean, for it was like, there were these, is it really 2000? I think it was 4, 5, 6. That's it. Now I have it. 4, 5, 6. 4 was blogging. 5 was podcasting, audio podcasting, and 6 was
video,
YouTube, and all that stuff started. It was like 3 consecutive years, text, audio, video. I thought like, oh, what's going on? And there was hype around any of these a lot. And then, you know, expectations were high and everybody was disappointed. And 5 years later, it really started to glow because people just needed time to deal with it. And somehow it's also, I think this whole Occupy movement might be a total fail in the end, you know, but it was an interesting beta. It was, everybody thought like, oh yeah, we could like kick out 15-year-old bored in front of their computers using hashtags, and then 2 weeks later it's a revolution on the street. Fuck off, what's happening? And then of course it was all pepper sprayed away, and it wasn't really the right way to do it, but people learned a lot from this, and next time it's just going to be different. And doing your own media is a part of that story. We're doing it now. That's good. I still have the feeling it's in its infancy, while it's also still trying sort of to copy what was there before with radio, with video, and so on. The real innovative way of dealing with it is not yet here. It's still in the process. It's still a birth process for me. We've talked about this already a lot, Thomas, you know, production-wise. It's just too much work. It needs more tools. It needs more automated processes. It needs more services and interconnected software to be easy. But this is... That's what I see happening next year. I really believe that media automation is coming up because we all feel the need for it. You know, now imagine Arab Spring plus very easy ways to do radio, you know, also video, of course. YouTube is fine, but the bandwidth problems and so on, you know, then we all want BitTorrent, but nobody is able to set up the tracker properly and do all these things. It's still too complicated. And it's a good way that the hacker movement is now sort of finding a new hobby, You know, with, and the hobby is, oh yeah, let's change the world. that's the feeling I have. It's like change a revolution. WikiLeaks was sort of also one of these things. Like, oh yeah, let's fuck them all. You know, like put off all these the tons of mistakes being made again. You know, it was in the end result, or at least like the intermediate result is WikiLeaks is I can't stand this story anymore, but next iteration is going to be different, and an intelligent media network that is not easy to censor, that slips through every hole that is available, that is easily referable to. It's easy to link to a blog, but it's not easy to link to the show. You know why? You know, so we need to do something about this. There should be a link, and people click on it, and then they are in the right discussion, and they're not at the beginning of our talk, but they are here at this very particular from to part of this thing, and that's what's also needed. That's my focus. That's what I wanna. Turn my eyes on next year.
I could continue there, and I think you're doing many, many things great, Tim. I mean, personal media, the subtitle of the meta even, I think that pretty much outlines it. Giving people a voice has become so important, especially since the Arab Spring, we see what citizen journalism can achieve. And yeah, I also hope to see that we get the technology out and make it more easier, even available for people, because right now the necessities and knowledge are too high.
Yeah, what personal computing did to computing, personal media could do to media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jeremy?
First of all, I think I share most of the, can we call it a pessimism? Looking at the world, well, as crude as it is, and could probably go with some meltdowns or things happening, but nevertheless, I'm very proud of the passion I see in our communities, very proud of the energy we managed to deploy, of the efforts we managed to achieve. And I'm very proud that some of our values are really growing and being more and more exposed and followed and shared. And in the end, this is a culture. This is a common culture we're living and practicing here and every day at home. And when I say home, I mean the internet. And this is a culture, so this is about shared values. This is shared values. This is a shared ethics, and I'm very proud of those. And I think we should be all very, very proud of those. And what I wish is that, well, I don't really count in years, you know. It's not, but whatever happens, that the next weeks, months, or whatever, we'll win more battles. We'll make our values more visible. And we'll have, once again, more and more occasion to make the sharing of knowledge, openness, and freedom at the center, on the center of the table.
Yeah, GMC just signaled with our signature that we have to kill the show now because.
Well, we're going off air, so that's.
Okay, yeah. Good. We have to say goodbye to Radio Pi, I think it was.
Indeed.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, and then it's my duty to say goodbye to all the listeners out there. I hope it was an interesting show. It was quite full of internal affairs, but I think you got some insights into the hacker scene and the people who populate the 28th Communication Congress. And that's it for tonight from Signal Hackerspaces. And
may you all live in interesting times.
And be excellent.
Pi Radio. Sie hören Pi Radio.
Corner.